And now,
great to be back.
Back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
Awesome.
And your host, Bill Frank.
Welcome back. As the world shifts to a more knowledge economy, companies that can attract and retain the best and brightest employees will be the winners. The most highly sought after executives will be those that can create an environment where employees can grow, contribute, and feel rewarded. My next guest draws on interviews with more than 200 CEOs to offer business leaders the wisdom and guidance to move their organizations faster, quicker, and more nimbly. The book, Quick and Nimble, Lessons from Leading CEOs on How to Create a Culture of Innovation, taps into the collective wisdom of CEOs like Jeff Weiner of LinkedIn, Tony Hsieh of Zappos, Angie Hicks of Angie's List, and Steve Case, formerly of AOL. Author Adam Bryant uses his unprecedented access to the CEOs to map out their best practices that other business managers can put into effect. Adam Bryant is the corner office columnist at the New York Times. The interview series he launched in 2009 has attracted a wide and loyal following every week. Adam has held many roles at the New York Times. He's also a former senior writer and business editor at Newsweek magazine. Joining me from New York, welcome to the show, Adam. How are you today?
Thanks, Bill. Glad to be here.
Well, thank you. And thank you for writing the book. I think it's amazing the access that you have to these CEOs and then putting together their collective wisdom. I guess it's sort of like what Napoleon Hill did about a century ago when he put together Think and Grow Rich. I want to tap into what these leaders told you. And I find it interesting that you start the book with a chapter titled Why Culture Matters. And you liken culture to the connective tissue in the body. So I'm going to put it to you. Why does culture matter?
A lot of people look at companies and organizations through two lenses. One of them is strategy, and the other one is results. And I think whether they're Wall Street analysts or investors, those are the things that people tend to look at. They're more concrete. You know, certainly with results, you can put on a spreadsheet. But I really believe that culture is kind of the X factor that separates companies. And if you sort of indulge the intellectual exercise, you imagine two companies with basically the same size and strategy, the thing that is going to determine who wins, I believe, is culture. Because if you can get the kind of collective brain power of everybody in the group and get them working together effectively as a team, I think they're going to win. And especially in this day and age when the pace of change is just so relentless, culture is increasingly important so that you can shift on a dime if you need to.
And some of the companies that you interviewed do shift on a dime. Well, if culture is so important, Adam, then what do you see as some of the problems in how culture companies put together their company culture?
A big part of the problem with culture is that it is a very fuzzy and amorphous word. I mean, if you and I stood in front of a whiteboard, Bill, and said, well, what's culture? We could easily put, you know, 100 things up there. And the thing is, they would all be right. And so I think a lot of companies take a more of a passive approach with culture, and they figure, you know, people are who the way they are, and you know, they let culture evolve. But the metaphor that I use is one of cholesterol. In the same way that you have good and bad culture in companies, you know, you've got good and bad cholesterol in the body, and so you really have to take deliberate actions as a leader to make sure that you kind of push down the bad cholesterol and bring up the good. And it's really about being thoughtful and deliberate about culture, because if you're not, it's going to happen on its own. And, you know, somebody like Tony Hsieh at Zappos tells memorable stories about how with one of the companies that he helped start, he didn't even want to go to work because he just didn't really like the culture of the place. And that's why when he went to Zappos, he learned his lesson to be much more deliberate about it. One of the things I tried to accomplish with the book is to really set out what are the biggest drivers of culture. Because again, as we just talked about, culture is really amorphous. And I think the real challenge is trying to figure out, well, what are the biggest drivers of culture, the things that, if done well, have an outsized positive impact, and if done badly or not at all, have an outsized negative impact. And that was really the question that helped frame the book and kind of guided my research through all the interviews. And, you know, we can go through a couple of them, but to me, one of the most important ones is for leaders to stand up and provide their employees with a simple plan for where they're going and how they're going to get there. And I know that sounds simple and obvious, but it's actually pretty hard, and a lot of companies don't do it. It's difficult to distill down into the one, two, or three things that really matter for an organization, and to come up with sort of measurable goals and track the success. And if you do that well, I think it helps everybody contribute to the team, because I think as human beings, we want to contribute. We want to be a part of the team, but when the goals aren't clear, or a company says we've got 12 priorities this year, then what you get is the sort of silo effects where, whether it's different departments or even individuals, are essentially pursuing their own agendas. And that's where you get some of the politics and the turf battles and things like that. So,
all right. My guest is Adam Bryant. We're talking about his new book about corporate culture. So, Adam, let's take a look at the real workings inside of a company today, because we're really faced with an interesting time in history. It's the first time ever that we've got four generations coexisting in the workplace at the same time. We've got the traditionals who are phasing out and retiring, baby boomers, Gen X, and millennials. So based on all of the wisdom that you gained from the 200 CEOs that you talked to, translate that across generational lines. Does it work the same with a millennial as it does with a baby boomer in the office place?
I think it does. I mean, the things that I tried to pull out from the interviews, these big drivers of culture, I think they do sort of transcend generational differences. And a lot of them are sort of operate at a very human level, like how to interact with your colleagues and showing people respect, and how to have candid feedback discussions. And I also have a chapter on the hazards of email, which I believe can be really damaging to a culture if people communicate too much over email. And I know there are some generational differences there.
Sure are.
And I think that's fine if in your network of friends to be just texting with them. But it's very different when you go into a company and you're working with people who are your colleagues, different generations. And I really believe that email does nothing to build relationships and the connective tissue between people, and is much more likely to damage whatever fabric is there to begin with, for the simple reason that things get lost in translation in emails. You've probably seen it yourself, where you send somebody what to you is a very clear email, but you get this response back, and it makes you wonder, well, what did they think I was saying? And so I've talked to a lot of companies that have very clear policies about you can't argue over email, and they try and really get people actually talking to each other, whether it's over the phone, over Skype, or in person.
Well, and I think that that's valuable, and I agree with a lot of what you wrote about in email being actually very damaging to a corporate culture if you over-rely on email. But let's come back to this interactions that you were talking about and talk about generational, because the millennial generation isn't particularly good at communicating, at least verbally and in person. Isn't it incumbent upon the organization to teach that millennial the organizational skills of how to communicate in person, how to have a disagreement with a colleague and still move forward?
And many companies I've interviewed do that, where they will run classes, sort of brown bag lunches on how to improve your presentation skills. They'll give training sessions on how to give people feedback and how to stay on your side of the net, as the expression goes, in terms of when you're giving people feedback, you never make statements that assume what is motivating them. You only talk about your reactions to the behavior. So a lot of companies do take those steps. Millennials are an interesting group, and it does come up often in my interviews, because I feel that the CEOs tell me they do present challenges, both good and bad. And some of the themes that come up is that they tend to be impatient. They want to move around a lot. I think part of it is they want to keep learning. So they'll do a job for 6 months and say, you know, I'm ready for the next one, where the boss might want them to do it for a year or even two, or really dig in. And you know, I have talked to a lot of CEOs who have kind of embraced it and say, rather than fighting it, they deliberately move people around a lot. The other theme that comes up with millennials is this notion of sort of feedback and wanting to get a lot of feedback on how they're doing. And it's not so much this cartoonish notion of you know, we're going to give you a trophy just for showing up. I mean, that's kind of the cartoonish idea that has formed a little bit around this generation. But I heard a really smart take from one CEO he who said that millennials have grown up with the internet and social media, so they have an instant feedback mechanism for almost everything they do. If they post something on Facebook, 2 minutes later they got 5 likes on it. And so they have come to expect feedback in every interaction. And so they simply want that feedback at work. Not so much, how am I doing, like give me a pat on the back and tell me I'm great, but they want it. They just want feedback. They don't want to wait 9 months until their performance review to find out how they're doing.
I think the untold story in all of that, though, is what the millennials can teach the baby boomers, because there's a two-way street. Millennials are very impatient with baby boomers in the workplace because of baby boomers' apparent lack of understanding of technology. And, yeah, of course, they're the possessors of all that knowledge. How does that flow of information help move a company forward and be more nimble and quick?
And that is part of the balance. CEOs talk about how they have to use sort of non-traditional screens for hiring this younger generation, because maybe on paper they don't quite have the resume that you'd want for a position, but they come in, they've got a lot of ideas, they do think outside of the box. Some of them have a healthy disrespect for what's been done before, because there's just so many changes going on in so many industries that you want some of that, but not too much, of course. I really believe at the end of the day, you want to hit that sweet spot in any and all employees, regardless of their age. You want that balance of humility and confidence. You want them to be respectful of what they don't know and be self-aware and always be learning. But you also want people who have a clear point of view and have thought through it. And that was captured in a great phrase I heard from one CEO. He says, I like people with desirable self-confidence.
Well, you mentioned that CEOs are a little bit more forgiving and they look for certain things. I found it interesting that when you build a great team, you're going to have to hire people and bring them in. And there were some very interesting, thought-provoking questions that some of these CEOs ask potential employees. What were some of the more memorable ones in your mind?
Sure. Tony Hsieh of Zappos, he asked a couple of interesting ones. He will say, if I was interviewing, I'd say, Bill, on a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you? And I think it's a great question because it works on a few levels. One, it signals to employees or to job candidates that, hey, we recognize that everybody's a little bit weird, and we have a weird culture here at Zappos, and we want you to bring your weird into work. But, you know, how weird are you? Another interesting question he asks is, what is the biggest misperception that people have about you? And once the job candidate answers that, then he comes in with the punchline, which is, well, what's the difference between perception and misperception? So that question is kind of a clever one to get at issues of self-awareness. I've heard other ones, too, where, you know, one of the most predictable questions in job interviews are, what are your strengths and weaknesses? And everybody is ready for that. You know, my weaknesses are I care too much, I work too hard, I'm a perfectionist. And the CEOs have heard it all before. I'm also not a huge fan of the weakness question, because implicit in that is that there's something about you that you can't change. It's almost like you've got a bum leg or something. And so one young CEO I talked to has a different spin on that. He will say to people in a job interview, hey, do you think you're going to be different 5 years from now than you are today? And people inevitably say, well, of course I am. And then he'll say, well, how do you think you're going to be different? You know, in what ways do you think you're going to evolve and grow? And I think that gives it much more positive spin on the issue, and also, you know, gets at this notion of self-awareness. And are you the kind of person who's always pushing yourself to improve?
I think that's a great question. My guest is Adam Bryant, author of the new book, Quick and Nimble, Lessons from Leading CEOs on How to Create a Culture of Innovation. And Adam, in the book, you talk about one of the cornerstones of creating a great culture is holding adult conversations. In fact, you spend an entire chapter on it. Why is it holding adult conversations in the business place is so difficult?
I think because they're stressful, and if you have to have a tough conversation with somebody behind a closed door, you don't know how the person's going to react. You feel like you're stepping into a knife fight in a phone booth. And so I think people will go out of their way to avoid them. And, you know, they're not fun, right? You'd like to give people only good news, but inevitably problems crop up and there's performance issues and you have to have these conversations. And I think, again, most people go out of their way to avoid them. And So they'll rationalize reasons why, oh, it's just a one-off, and maybe they were having a bad day, and then they'll say, oh, I'll bring this up in their performance review 9 months later. And then by then, if you bring it up and, you know, people can react really badly and maybe you misunderstood the context. So I think the best companies really have a culture of giving immediate feedback, because if you just make it part of the daily flow, hey, you did this really well. Hey, I saw how you did that. You know, I think you could do that better next time this way. Then people get desensitized to it. And to me, that's really the key word. You have to make it less of a big deal and just part of the flow. And there is an art to giving people feedback. Again, I talked about earlier about this notion of you don't go over the net. So when you're giving people feedback, you never say anything that assumes you know why somebody is doing what they're doing. So you just talk about how it makes you feel. Like, I know, notice you're coming in 20 minutes late every day. That makes me feel like you don't care, as opposed to saying it seems like you don't care. And that's a small difference, but it's a powerful one, because then the person can't argue with you about your feelings. Where if you say, you know, I think you don't care, they're going to go, how can you possibly say that? So there are tricks, and a lot of companies train people on how to have these discussions, because if you don't do it, it's like all this energy that gets corked up. It's not the kind of team dynamic that you need.
No, it's not. But giving good feedback is an art form in and of itself. And when you hire somebody who's eventually going to manage other people, you really have no way of knowing if that individual has good feedback skills. So how does an organization teach that? How does an organization instill that into its corporate culture?
And it does start with hiring. You're right. And a lot of CEOs I've talked to will have explicit conversations in the interview and say, tell me about some feedback you've gotten from previous bosses. What would your boss say is a growth opportunity for you? Tell me about a tough situation where you had to talk to an employee. Have you ever fired somebody, and how did you handle that? And those kind of questions give them insight into whether this person is comfortable, whether they're self-aware and open to feedback. Once you get that right person, then you can really just reinforce the culture. And I interviewed one CEO who has a standing committee of, it's a volunteer committee inside his company, where they study, they bring in experts about how to give feedback to people, and then they teach their colleagues, because the CEO sees it as just so important to having an effective culture. And this idea of, you know, we shouldn't ever censor ourselves from saying something to our colleagues about something that they could be doing better, because that's just going to slow down the company. And I think the leaders have to model it. I mean, everybody picks up their cues from the leader, and you know, leaders can say in a meeting, hey, I had this idea last week. Somebody gave me some feedback about it. They were right. I was wrong, and I've changed my mind, and thank you for that. And so you model the behavior, and then people go, oh, okay, that's how we work around here.
I see. All right, my guest is Adam Bryant. So, Adam, how does a company retain a kind of a startup culture as it grows? I mean, is it possible for an Apple or a Google or a Twitter or even a Facebook to remain agile and quick as it grows and it becomes a multi-billion dollar organization?
Well, that's the goal. And the question is, you know, how do you retain as much of that for as long as you can? In contrast to a company like, say, Microsoft, which by its own admission said last summer that it needed to reorganize because it was running into that silo behavior. So then the question is, well, what are the things you can do to hold on to that startup feel as long as you can? And I mentioned Simple Plan earlier in the interview. I think values are really important, and I know that discussion of values in a company can make people think of an episode of The Office and roll their eyes. But at a lot of companies I've interviewed, they're very thoughtful about it, and they reinforce it at every step of the way. They come up with their values, they use those values to hire, to fire, and they reward people who embody them best. And the danger with values is that if you don't live by them, if people see a clear gap between the stated behaviors and what people are allowed to get away with, that can be super dangerous, because that makes people cynical, and cynicism can be a sort of cancer that spreads through an organization. I also think, again, very human level, you have to treat people with respect, because if you don't treat people with respect, and I think you know, a lot of your listeners, like me, have had bad bosses in the past who might have humiliated you in front of colleagues. That can be so damaging on so many levels. Your job as a leader is to get everybody to bring their best self to work every day, and that phrase came up in a lot of my interviews, your best self. How do you get people to bring their best self to work every day? One way to get them to not do that is to treat them disrespectfully, and then they're going to be kind of parking some of themselves at the door when they walk in. You know, a lot of companies talk about being a family, but I think team is a much better metaphor. And you really do have to hold people accountable. I mean, I like simple rules like the one I heard from one CEO who at his company says, you know, don't, if you say you're going to do something, you have to do it. And that sounds simple, but
simple, yeah. We've
all met people who will look you in the eye and say, I will do this. And then, you know, they're not going to do it. So having that as kind of like a baseline behavior, I think, can keep a company moving quickly.
My guest is Adam Bryant, author of the new book, Quick and Nimble, Lessons from Leading CEOs on How to Create a Culture of Innovation. Adam, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, Quick and Nimble?
I think that culture is something that they have to think about, and there are ways to do it. There are important things that managers, leaders, and even employees can take a role in terms of creating a good culture. And at the end of the day, you know, we spend a lot of time at work, and it should be a place where you want to go to work. And so I think there's a good return on investment of time spent thinking about culture.
That makes a whole lot of sense. Adam, what did you get out of writing the book?
So many things, Bill. It's one of my lasting takeaways is just that so much of this stuff does play out at a very human level, just how we talk to each other, how we treat each other, how we communicate, not on email, for example. And a lot of those things sound so basic, but we've gotten away from them for a lot of reasons, including with technology. And it's important to remember that it's all about simple human relationships, and that it can be very powerful when those are good relationships.
That it can. My guest has been Adam Bryant, author of the book, Quick and Nimble, Lessons from Leading CEOs on How to Create a Culture of Innovation. Adam, you've probably piqued the interest of some of my listeners. If they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go?
My personal website is adambryantbooks.com, all one word.
adambryantbooks.com. Adam, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
I appreciate it, Bill. Thank you.